ओम शांति, ओम शांति, ओम शांति। इट्स अ वेरी लवली थीम हैज बीन केप्ट फ्रॉम ओम टू ओम शांति। दिस वर्ड ओम has a very deep meaning. The word Om has a very deep meaning. It's only three alphabets word. A Om, A U M, as written in English, A U M, and in Hindi it is three words, three alphabets in one word. A, U, N, M. A, U, M. And the meaning of A, U, M is that is me. A, U, M. That is me. And also when the conch is blown, the sound which comes from that conch also is Om, you know, Om. So you open your closed mouth and say Om, and then you close again. You start open mouth and then at the end you close again. So you come back to the origin. Even when you write a Oma, you go up, and then that the two signs meet. So a Oma, and then those when you write a is the last end and the first end, they meet. So it is going round and coming back to the origin. This is what Om really means. So that is me. What is that which is me? That which is me is the original self. So I am that, and that is me. It is in simple translation, this is the meaning. I am that, and that is me. And we can say this is the incorporeal meaning, incorporeal meaning. I am a soul, and that soul is me. So who am I? We say Om, and then we say Shanti. So I am that, a soul, and then what type of soul? Shanti means peace. I am a peaceful soul. This is one literal meaning, simple meaning of Om, Shanti. I am a peaceful soul. I am that which is peaceful. Now this cannot be said for the body. For the body it cannot be said that it is peaceful. And it's not that the body needs peace. The body has always to be in action. You know, every part of the body, every organ of the body has to be in action. You know, supposing the heart stops, it is death. Any organ of the body, if it stops working, it is death. All the vital organs of the body, the lungs, the liver, the kidney, and the heart, all the glands, all of them are very, very important. All have a very, very important function to do. And if any of these organs stop functioning, it will be approaching death. So we cannot say I am that for the body. or that is me. Om Shanti, I am the body which is peaceful. Because body cannot be peaceful. It is always working. Even when we are sleeping, Baba was saying the other day, the soul rests, but the body is still working. Even in sleep, the heart is functioning, the lungs are working, the blood circulation is going on, all the systems in the body keep working even when we are asleep. So, nobody really aspires for the peace of the body, because peace of the body means death. You know, anywhere something stops moving, then that is death for that part, for that organ. And we don't want death, we want life. We want to live. And still we want peace. So what is that which is living and still can be peaceful? Physical body, if it's living, if it is, you know, it's working, it is, cannot be peaceful, it cannot remain quiet. Only after death, we say, the body is in peace. It has been laid to rest. Eternal rest, eternal peace. But still, people pray to God for the peace of the soul. Or they say that the soul has gone to heaven. Or sometimes in Christianity they believe that the soul is with the body in the grave. And then God will come and liberate the souls. And the souls from the grave, they will all rise with Christ. So these are different concepts. In Islam also they say something similar. That is why they bury the body. Because they also believe in Christianity that how Christ was resurrected, he just disappeared from the grave along with the body. Now, once a person dies, his body cannot become alive again. It's no question of resurrection like that. But if the soul is still in the body, of course the soul is very much alive in the body, so it can do actions. Baba said in today's Murli that even when Dharamraj punishes, the soul cannot experience punishment without the body. It needs a body for any action, you know, as well as for the response to that action. It could be a punishment, it could be a reward or whatever. It has to be through the body. So body is a medium. Body is the means by which we can experience peace or peacelessness. And what is this peace or peacelessness based on? It is based on our thoughts. If our thoughts are peaceful, if our thoughts are filled with God's love, if our thoughts are filled with knowledge, then there is peace. So knowledge, purity, love, strength, all these qualities lead to peace. But only when the soul is in the body and the soul has to experience that it is different from the body, then it can experience these qualities. But if the soul is body conscious, that I am the body, then the soul can't experience these things. Body consciousness is like a curtain which keeps the soul hidden, you know, which keeps peace hidden from the soul, is behind the curtain. And Babi says that is the curtain of body consciousness. When this curtain of body consciousness is removed, the soul experiences the peace. So now Baba is saying, you are a peaceful soul. And therefore be soul conscious, because only then you can experience peace. Without being soul conscious, peace cannot come in the soul. Peace can be understood in different ways. You know, some people say, no sound is peace, no war is peace, no action is peace. So, the definition of peace is taken in an indirect way. It is not direct speech. What is peace? They say no sound is peace, no war is peace, no action is peace. So when the soul is not performing any action, then they say the soul is in peace. The soul is different from the body, so when we understand, we realize this, we are able to detach ourselves. But then only understanding will not do. We have to also practice it. In a second, Baba says, become soul conscious. Brahma Baba did that at the beginning. How he used to become soul conscious so easily, so quickly, he attained the state of being soul conscious. He would look at everybody, all his lokiks, his relatives, but instantly he would become soul conscious. He would see the other children living in Madhuban with Baba, and immediately he would look around and become soul conscious. So this was Brahma Baba's life before. He knew that he was an embodiment of peace, but still he was in search of peace. We tell the reason why he could not experience peace, because he was body conscious. And even before Shiv Baba entered in his body, he used to talk to his mind, he used to talk to his intellect, he used to talk to his own soul. He would say, oh mind, why are you so naughty? Why are you running about here and there like a vagabond? Now come under my control. You are my slave. You have to be under my control. You have to go only where I tell you to go. So he used to tell this to himself even before he got Baba's Gyan. And when he got Baba's Gyan, of course, he was stamped that you are the soul who is going to become the first prince of golden age. Before that, even Brahma Baba did not know, Shiva Baba did not know, nobody knew. The trance messengers used to go into trance and then bring the message that how this one will be called Brahma. And right from the beginning, this Om chanting was so popular in the yajna. There would be long, long hours of Om Shanti. You like to practice with me? Long Om Shanti. So let us practice together this Om. This word Om we have to learn by heart to such a way that kitchen, dining hall, dining room and new birth all have to come in one frame. So Baba used to talk about Om even before. He used to tell his mind, oh mind, why are you so naughty? Why don't you pay attention to what the intellect says? Why don't you do according to the intellect? or the mind would come under the influence of the sense organs. And he would say, "Oh, sense organs, why are you harassing my mind so much?" You know, Baba would speak to himself, speak to his words, speak to his actions, speak to his colleague who used to televise. So Baba also says that, "I televise you. I show you your true picture, who you are. And now understand yourself. Go to your original stage and understand the five forms also are somewhat like our original stage. Even the Sangam Yugi form is our original stage when God comes and makes us belong to Him. So at the beginning, what they used to do is they used to just chant Om. That's all. So you like to chant with me? Let us chant together. And it's a long O. And then again, O. So when Ma is said, then the lips close. Oh, so let's start. That's how they used to chant. Let us start, okay? Just keep, you can close your eyes if you like. And go inwards. Check yourself. Seat yourself behind the eyes. At the center of your forehead. Now, you can chant. This is how in the yajna Baba used to chant Om. Let me see how are y'all are chanting. Start, I won't speak because my voice is louder. So start. How do you feel? How do you feel? You know, they say that this is the sound also uttered in the sun. The scientists have proved that Om is uttered even in the sun. Those who are going into space, they are able to hear this sound in space. Om. So when you say you are coming back to yourself. So at the beginning when Baba used to utter Om, Shanti was not spoken at that time, just Om. And how those sisters sitting in the audience, they would just go into trance. They would go into trance. It would give them such powerful vibrations and they would go into trance and see themselves in golden age, see themselves in Paramdham, see themselves in the subtle regions, you know. They used to see themselves in front of Shiv Baba, and it was such a wonderful experience. And whole day they would sit in that silence, silence, silence. And Baba used to write Om everywhere. Baba's locking home in Hyderabad was even before Baba got Gyan, he had named that house as Om Nivas, the residence of Om. Nivas means residence, so residence of Om. And in that house, first of all, how he started doing satsang, the spiritual gathering, and people used to come to his house. But before people started coming to his house, he used to chant this much before, you know, and with his family, and would read the Gita to them. And when Shiv Baba came, well, everything changed. Brahma Baba had the Gita in his hand, and he wanted to open the book and start reciting the shlokas, and Shiv Baba would come in his body and start speaking. And Brahma Baba used to wonder, who is speaking? I'm not speaking. I'm silent. But who is speaking through this mouth? And he used to also hear, you know, what Shiv Baba would be speaking. And would wonder, how are these words coming out from my lips? I'm not saying, I'm not thinking, I'm not doing anything, but these words are coming out from my lips. So even Brahma Baba used to wonder, what is happening? How is this voice coming out from my lips without my knowledge? My intellect is not thinking anything. Even my mind is not thinking anything. How is this happening? He did not understand. I'm sure today Baba said in the Murli that when the Christ soul entered the body of Jesus, I'm sure even Jesus must not be knowing what's happening, because Christ would speak through the body of Jesus, and the soul of Jesus would be listening to what Christ is speaking. And Baba said today that how when he was crucified, it wasn't the soul of Christ which got the feeling of pain, but it was the soul of Jesus. Because that soul of Jesus must have come down for a few births, no? But the soul of Christ came directly from the soul world. And as a very pure soul, it cannot experience any pain or any sorrow. And therefore, Baba speaks about two souls. But then again, the soul of Christ is after all a soul. He is a prophet's soul, a founding father, but not the supreme soul. And when the supreme soul comes, he is a free soul. He can come and go whenever he wants. But I think even the soul of Christ must be a free soul. And also giving strength to the souls which would come from the soul world. So that's how the religions are established. And Baba said in today's Murli, I established the first religion. You know this word, Alauddin. Alauddin is made up of three words. Alauddin. And Allah means God. Who is that one? That God who establishes the first religion. Deen means religion. So the one who establishes the first religion, that is Allah. So God establishes the first religion. And which is that religion which God establishes? It is the deity religion. So deity religion then goes into oblivion. And there are just pictures, just images of those deities, that's all. But those deities are no more in their practical life in the world now. But Baba says, yes, the deity souls have descended. And at this time of the confluence age, They get this gyan again from Shiv Baba and again become deities. But then there's a lot of similarity between the prophet's souls and Shiv Baba's soul, because Shiv Baba is also, Baba says, I am the true messenger. The biggest contrast, of course, is that Shiv Baba brings the message of returning home. But prophet souls, they don't bring message of returning home, because actually their souls are still to descend from the soul world. So how can they give the message of returning home? And therefore Baba says, I am the only messenger. Those souls who come from the soul world, they're already so pure, so clean. They are not impure, they are not tamopradhan, and they don't need much service. You know, like if the clothes are very dirty, then they have to be washed and cleaned very thoroughly. So a lot of hard effort is required to wash the very dirty linen. But if the clothes are not dirty and you have to wash okay, it won't take much work, much labor. So I don't think really Christ or any of these prophet souls had to work hard to establish the religion. But when Shiv Baba comes, he has to work hard to establish the deity religion, because the souls have descended 84 births, and in the last birth all the linen, we said, has become so dirty that it takes so long for the soul to be cleansed. But then one similarity is there, that the prophet's soul speaks, but the soul in whose body that prophet's soul enters, he gets the punishment or he is suffering, but not that prophet's soul. Even Brahma Baba, you know, he had lots of cough. He used to cough a lot, old body, 90 years, 93 years. And Lachuben, she was always with Baba and she used to carry a little pot. And Baba used to spit out, because of course it was going to the lungs. When he would speak, then he would get that mucus and he would spit out. He had to spit out all the time. And means occasionally, not every sentence, but in between he had to. And sometimes he used to cough a lot. So then at that moment Baba would say, see, this is Brahma Baba's karma, this soul's karma. At this time Shiv Baba is not suffering, because when we used to see Baba coughing, we used to say, oh Baba, so much coughing, like we see Dadi Janki, she's also coughing a lot. But then we feel so sorry for Dadi Janki, no? Oh, she's coughing so much. But same thing used to be for Brahma Baba. Even Dadi Janki, Dadi Prakashmani, old age, after 80 years this body deteriorates. So Dadi Janki and Dadi Kumarka, they both used to say, we have inherited Brahma Baba's inheritance of cough. We have inherited everything from Brahma Baba, so even this cough we have inherited. So when afterwards, when the cough would be over, Baba would say, children, don't worry, this is Brahma Baba, this one's karma, karma bhog. But Shiv Baba is not suffering, not Shiv Baba. Shiv Baba cannot suffer, he is beyond karma, he is beyond any suffering. But this one has to suffer. And it is good, Baba used to be happy. Baba used to say, if the karma is being finished in this body itself, it is good. Even Dadi used to say, it's good if this karma is finishing in this body, because we should not go to get punishment in Dharamrajpuri. So let us finish our karmic account here itself. In Dharamrajpuri, we should be with Dharamraj, like a jury with the Chief Justice, the jury of judges with the Supreme Justice. And so that we could give justice to other souls, but not become culprits ourselves, not become those who are to be punished ourselves. So Baba used to also be happy, even if there any physical, any problem with the body. Baba once said that once he was being operated. He had a small operation, hernia operation, and for that he had to go to Mumbai, because in Mount Abu there were no good hospitals at that time. So Baba went to Bombay and got a small operation, hernia operation is called, some muscle expansion, something happens there. And then the operation was done one day, and the next day the doctor came to see Baba. But Baba was already sitting and talking to a few souls. And when the doctor came, Baba asked the doctor, "How are you, child? How are you?" The doctor was surprised. Who should be asking whom? Should a patient ask a doctor, "How are you?" Or should the doctor ask the patient, "How are you?" So it was the other way around. Brahma Baba asking the doctor, "How are you?" There was an occasion when Brahma Baba was sitting with others, and the doctor did not know who was the patient, because Baba was sitting with everyone. And therefore we say that how Brahma Baba went beyond the pull of the body. But at the beginning, Baba had to make a lot of effort to become soul conscious. It's not that he did not have any attachments. He did have attachments. He was attached to his family. He was attached to his wife, also attached to his daughter-in-law in particular. Baba's Laukik daughter-in-law, Brijendra Dadi, she was also very attached to Baba. She was very beautiful too. So Baba used to, you know, make her his advertisement. Because he was a businessman, he used to make jewelry of gold with diamonds studded on them, on that jewelry. And he would take that jewelry to the kings, because the queens would not come to his shop to buy jewelry, diamond jewelry. So Baba was invited by the kings to their palaces. And what Baba used to do, he used to make his daughter-in-law, Brijendra Dadi, wear those ornaments, those diamond ornaments. And then take daughter-in-law with those diamond jewelry to the palaces. And then the kings would see her, and they would love the jewelry which would be around her neck or her hands or nose or ears, whatever. And then she would go to the queens. The queens would be under veils. No, they would not just come out open like that with the kings. They used to be behind the veils in their own barracks or their own rooms. And she would go there, and then she would talk to them, and they would say, "Oh, this necklace is beautiful. I want such a necklace." And then how Baba would meet them and then and do the business. So she was like an advertisement for Baba, because it was through her that the queens loved those ornaments and they would buy from Baba. So Baba was very attached to Baba, to his daughter-in-law, the elder. Baba had two sons, the elder son's wife. And she was also so attached to him. Baba was more of a father to her than her real father, although he was a father-in-law. But then how to finish off this attachment or this pull, because he wound up his business, everything was over. How Baba used to write on the walls. His Laukik wife's name was Yashoda. His Laukik daughter-in-law's name was Radhika. So Baba used to write on the walls, "Yashoda is a soul, Yashoda is a soul, Om," and "Yashoda is a soul, Yashoda is a soul, Radhika is a soul." And Radhika and Yashoda used to read what Baba has written on the walls. And this is how they too became soul conscious. Baba actually inspired them to become soul conscious. He also would inspire himself by writing on the walls. But every time Baba says anything, the first word uttered was Om, Om, Om. And then Baba had to go to Kashmir. So by that time, Mama had also come with her mother. Mama's voice was very sweet voice she had. And she was a very good singer. And she used to also play musical instruments, the sitar and harmonium and all that. Baba would write songs. And he would give those songs, the script of those, you know, he would compose songs and he would give the script to Mama. And Mama would put music through her, the musical instrument, and she would sing. So, and when she would sing with Baba's song, which he had composed, then everyone would start singing. And then when Mama would, then Baba would tell Mama to chant Om. So she would start chanting Om. And as she would start chanting Om, all those seated in the audience, they would see Mama as Radhe. So, and if Baba also would be there, and Baba too would chant Om, both would chant Om, and then everybody would get the vision of Radhe and Krishna, or Lakshmi and Narayan, you know, standing or sitting in front of them. So this is how the vision started in the yajna. So Baba kept Mama in front. Her name was not Mama, her name was Radhe. Her name was also Radhe. And so Baba used to tell Mama to recite the song or to, you know, speak the murli. Sometimes Baba would write and she would read the murli, and then on the basis of that she would speak the murli. Not read, but speak the murli. Because in bhakti, there's a very interesting incident about Radhe and Krishna. And the incident is that Krishna, of course, he used to play the flute all the time. His flute was his favorite instrument. Whenever he wanted to call the cows, he wanted to call the gopis, whatever he wanted to do, he wanted to call anyone, his method of calling was to play the flute. So that's the way the gopis used to be attracted towards Krishna. And then the story goes that it was time for Krishna to go to Mathura to fight against Kans, who was a devil. Actually, he was his own uncle, but he was creating great havoc in Mathura. So it was time for him to go to Mathura. And Radhe came in his way, in Krishna's way, and said, "I will not allow you to go to Mathura, because if you leave Mathura, then this place, Vrindavan, where Krishna was, Radhe was, Gokul was the place, all that is all near Mathura. It is in North India, near Delhi. And the Jamuna River flows there." So Radhe refused to allow him to go to Mathura. And but he had to go. It was the clarion call for him, because he had to, you know, fight against Kans, the devil. So she said, "I will allow you to go to Mathura on one condition." And the condition she put up was that, "Give your flute to me. I will keep this flute safe with me so that you will come back for the flute." So Krishna agreed and he gave the flute to Radhe. And she protected that flute and kept it with her till Krishna came back after having defeated Kans. So the story goes that how Mama's voice was also like a flute. This morning somebody showed me that book of Mama, Melodies of Mama. Who was it? Who brought to me? Yeah, this sister, she brought to me. And she said, "What is this? Why Melodies?" So Melodies of Mama is a very lovely book of Murlis of Mama. And actually when Baba speaks about the Murli, Murli means music, Murli means song. So the Gita also, actually it comes from the word Geet. Geet means song. So song of knowledge, the music of knowledge. So Murli is like music for the soul. The soul feels enchanted with the Murli. And the same we used to experience for Mama too. How Mama's Murli was so simple to understand. Brahma Baba's, Sakal Baba's Murli, Shiv Baba and Brahma Baba's body, the Murlis were quite difficult at that time because Baba would not just elaborate on one point. Baba would speak so many different points, like the ocean. One wave coming from here, the other wave coming from there, another one coming from this side. And then only those who could understand the Gyan very well, they could understand Baba's Murli very well. Even now you see in Baba's Murli how so many points. But we won't we don't elaborate on each point because we have the knowledge. But then for the new ones, the Murli used to be difficult to be understood. So how Mama used to make the Murli simplified. And Mama, every time she would read the Murli, every Murli at least 5-6 times. 5-6 times. Even the first thing in the morning, she would wake up at 2 o'clock, first the Murli. Whole day, during the whole day, the Murli. That was her food for thought. And then churn on the Murli and then speak the Murli. And Mama had this speciality of making Baba's knowledge simplified. And so much respect for Baba that in front of Baba, she would never speak. In front of children, of course, she would be a very powerful speaker. But the moment Baba would come, immediately she would become quiet. History Hall was the place where Baba used to speak the Murli. There are 2 gaddis. During Baba's time, there were 3 gaddis. You know, on one side Baba's gaddi seat, on the other side Mama's seat, and in between also used to be a seat where the sisters would conduct meditation before Mama Baba would come. So that was a seat for the children. And then Mama would come and speak the Murli for about 15-20 minutes, and then Baba would come. But the moment Baba would come, Mama would become silent. Baba would tell Mama, "Mama, continue, finish your point." But no, she was totally silent. So much respect she had for Baba. And then when Baba would come and sit on the gaddi, Mama would get up from the gaddi to sit down in front of Baba. But Baba never allowed Mama to get up from her seat and sit on the ground, on the floor. Baba would say, "No, sit where you are." So that also is respect, no? Sit where you are. But then how would she listen to Baba? So what she used to do, she used to be on her side and would watch Baba all the time, whole time, the time he would be speaking the Murli. Not sitting in front, you know, somebody is speaking here and I'm sitting and looking in the front, not like that. She would have her face turned and she would be watching Baba and listening to the Murli. Many times Baba would, you know, try to hide and at least hear what Mama is saying. So, but the moment Mama would watch Baba coming, immediately she would stop. So several times what Baba would do, like in the history hall, Mama would be speaking and Baba would come and just, you know, stand near the door and very, very softly be there, without making any sound, and listen to what Mama is saying. Because the moment she would see Baba, she would stop. That was her respect for Baba. And therefore Baba used to listen very stealthily, like just, you know, not could not see her, but then just stand near the wall outside and hear Mama. So this was Mama's flute of knowledge. A simplified way of speaking the Murli. She would take one point and elaborate on that whole, only one point. Oh, God is not omnipresent, the whole Murli and God is not omnipresent. On soul, then the whole Murli only on soul. Or supreme soul, or cycle, whatever, one point, and the whole Murli on that. And therefore everyone loved Mama very much. Baba was like an authority, but Mama was like a sweet mother. And anything, the children would run to Mama, like the children run to the mother, so that's what she was. But she was so matured, even in that young age. There were many others who were much older than Dadi, older than Mama, but she was so matured. And she would give equal love to everyone. There was never the moment when anybody could ever complain that Mama loves this one more than me. No. Or Mama loves that one more than this one. No. No one ever complained. Never would Mama ever speak loudly, you know, even loud words she never spoke. Her voice would be so soft. Even when she would walk, her shoes or slippers, whatever she wore, never made any sound. And if Mama would watch somebody walking, tap, 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 you know, making a lot of noise whilst walking, Mama would say, oh, don't give sorrow to the ground. Don't give sorrow. When you say tap, 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 you know, making a lot of noise while walking, it's like giving sorrow even to the ground. So you should walk in such a way like a deity. How a deity walks, that should be the way you walk. How angels walk, how deities walk, and she was like that angel. Never would she laugh loudly, never. She would smile very sweetly, but never laugh. So these were the different, we can say, methods or secrets of the yajna. And how the 14 years passed in the yajna, it was something magic. Once I asked Manohar Dadi, you know, Manohar Dadi, she was the director of Gyan Sarovar before Didi Nirmala came. Once I asked her, Dadi, Manohar Dadi, Dadi, how did you pass those 14 years in the yajna? 14 years is not a small thing. It's a big amount of time, 14 years. And you know what she said? She said, 14 years, we didn't even realize that 14 years passed. We thought they were just 14 months or 14 days, because how quickly the time passed. So then I asked her, but what did you all do in those 14 years? And she said, well, we used to play, we used to sing, we used to dance, and we used to listen to the Murli. Sisters would go into trance, then those deities of golden age would come in someone's body, and then for 14, 15 days they stayed in the body. And how those sisters, they would become like angels, eat little, walk little, sit and just move around little bit. So that's what they used to do, 14, 15 days in the body, not a body. That's how in the yajna it happened. And when they would go into trance, they would see Dharamraj Puri, they would see Lakshmi Narayan, they would see many things in visions. And then they would come back and then enact those in the form of plays. That's what they used to do in the yajna. Because they didn't go out, they didn't go anywhere outside. 14 years in the yajna without seeing any outsider. That's what these dadis did. And therefore they could become so strong in those 14 years. In 1947, because 1950 they all migrated to Bharat after the partition. So in 47, India and Pakistan separated. So Karachi went to Pakistan. But then during that time there was so much chaos in the country. Chaos was tremendous, and people were so afraid. The Hindus were told to go to Bharat and the Muslims were told to go to Pakistan because it was divided on the basis of religion. So Pakistan became Muslim country. But Mahatma Gandhi, who was here in India, he said, no, we will not divide in this country and make it Hindustan or make it just for Hindus. But everybody, we will be allowed to live here. So all Muslims of India did not go to Pakistan, but Hindus mainly had to come. There were three options for them, for Hindus, even Sikhs. The option was go to Bharat. If you don't want to go to Bharat, then become a Muslim. If you don't want to become a Muslim, then head cut off, be killed. Only no fourth option. So how people ran from their empty-handed, barefooted, and leaving all their property, all their jewelry, everything, they just left and ran to India. This was such a period. But then Baba's yagya was also there. But how Baba protected the yagya? That no one ever came and did anything to the yagya. Of course, the police would come and then they would ask, who are you? Which religion you belong to? And the sisters would be in tapasya. They would say, we belong to religion of humanity, manav dharma. Our religion is humanity. We are servers of God. We are khudai khidmatgar. We are servers of God and we are serving humanity. So this used to be their answer. Serving humanity and servers of God. And the chief minister of Sindh province, he was like a very good friend of Baba, even in the Laukik life. He was a good friend of Baba. And how he put full protection in the yagya, so that no outsider could come, no one could do any harm to the sisters. And he used to tell Baba that, Baba, you make these sisters live here only. We will give 100% protection to them. Because if they live here, then this country of ours will become Pak. Pak means pure. So this land will become pure, if you pure people live here. But then Shiva Baba's orders were there, go to Bharat, go to Bharat. But still they lived for 3 years in Karachi, after the partition too. But during those 3 years, how Baba gave them such wonderful experiences, they didn't even realize that there was so much chaos going on outside, so much suffering outside, people were dying outside on the name of religion, you know, all that. The civil war was happening outside, but Baba's children were very, very protected. That chief minister was a very good friend of Baba. And, you know, Dadiji, a few years ago, she went to Karachi. And there she met that chief minister's grandson. And he had come for Dadi's program and he translated the Companion of God book in Urdu language for the people in Pakistan. So at the beginning, this word Om was the very common word which used to be uttered all the time whenever the sisters would meet each other. They did not say Om Shanti. They used to say Om, 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 Om to each other when they would meet each other. So Om Shanti came much later, but just Om. And how this, because everyone uttered Om there, this gathering was called Om Mandli. Mandli means gathering. So the gathering where everyone speaks Om. So, but then at the beginning when the yagya started, how people got visions and they surrendered to Baba. So at that time we can say 3 revolutionary acts happened at the time of establishment. 3 revolutionary acts. One revolutionary act was visions. So many visions, visions. Everyone who came got visions. And the second revolutionary act was that mainly women came. Men hardly came. It was mainly women who got these visions and they came to Baba. Some got visions in front of Baba. They would see Baba as Krishna. Or when they would be chanting Om with Baba, they would just go into trance. And some got visions of Baba even at their Laukik homes. They would get vision of Krishna and Krishna would tell them, if you want to meet me, go to this one. And they would see Baba standing, person, an old man dressed in white standing, and Krishna would be saying from behind, I cannot meet you like that, first go to him, I will meet you there. And then they used to look, come searching for Brahma Baba and find him. And the moment they would come in front of Brahma Baba, they would get vision of Krishna. Dadi Prakashmani was one of them. She got vision of Brahma Baba first Krishna at home, and then vision of Brahma, Krishna telling her, if you want to meet me, go to this one. And then when she went to Baba, she got vision of Krishna there. So many sisters, all these dadis, at the beginning they got visions. So we say the first revolutionary act was visions. And the second revolutionary act was that mothers, daughters, kumaris, they were more in number. And how they came and surrendered to Baba. And like a wonderful spiritual family was created. Apart from the Laukik family of Baba, because Laukik family also surrendered. Brahma Baba himself surrendered to the mothers. Shiva Baba told him, now surrender all your wealth to the mothers. So Baba willed all his property to the mothers. And so that was called Om Mandali, the gathering of Om. And then the third revolutionary act was that Shiva Baba made everyone take a vow, a pledge, a promise that we are going to lead a pure and holy life. So be holy, be yogi. That's what Shiva Baba said. And they all took a vow of remaining pure and becoming yogis. So when this vow was taken by such young kumaris, the people in the society, they got agitated, you know. What has this Dada Lake Raj done? How has he made these young girls take a vow of purity? They are so young. They don't know what the world is. They haven't seen anything. And if they are taking a vow like that, what if when they grow older they want to go back to the world? So Baba used to say, it's not me. It's not I who has done this. But it is that Supreme Father. His power is working. So people did not understand. When souls would get visions, even that, they would not understand. They would think that this person has some magical powers. Some magic. That's why people are able to get visions. Or when kumaris were attracted, people used to, you know, criticize. He's attracting women. He calls himself Krishna and he wants 16,108 wives. You know, that's how they used to defame Baba. That he is calling himself Krishna, because they show in Bhagavad that Krishna had 16,108 wives. All exaggeration, of course, but that's what they show. So they would then say, like a sarcastic remark, that he has got some 300-400 and is looking for 16,000. So that's what they used to say. And Baba used to say, see, this Baba is not doing anything. It's not this one's work. These miracles or whatever are happening, this magic, this power is not mine, it is Shiva Baba's. But people do not understand. So when they came to know that everyone in the gathering has taken a vow to lead a pure life, and they were such young kumaris, they asked Baba, Baba, what is this? What are you doing? And then Baba would say, it's not me. Even I took a vow. When these Kumaris took a vow, I also took a vow along with them. That I will lead a pure life. Even I didn't know that I had to lead a pure life. So this was all Shiv Baba's magic. And how Shiv Baba told Baba, surrender all your wealth to the Kumaris. And Mamma was the leader. Mamma, Dadi Prakashmani, Didi, Manmohini, they were 8 sisters. And everything what Baba had was surrendered to these sisters. And Baba made a will that I surrender all this wealth to the sisters, to my daughters. They are the ones who will look after everything. And after that, Baba became detached, very detached. And like Baba was saying yesterday, no iron chains, no golden chains also. He became very detached, and Mama was the leader. And then how Mama led the whole yagya. If there was any problem, of course Baba was there, but Shiv Baba and Brahma Baba's communication was always there. And Baba would come and speak the murli. Shiv Baba would come and speak the murli. Sometimes Brahma Baba would also speak. So it was like 2-in-1, a dual voice. Shiv Baba and Brahma Baba, that's what you see in the murlis. Yeah, sometimes it is Shiv Baba speaking, sometimes Brahma Baba speaking. Brahma Baba sharing his own experience. Like in today's murli also, Baba shared his experience that Baba had 12 gurus. Usually people keep only one guru, they don't go for many gurus. But why Baba had so many gurus? Because Baba used to ask them many questions. And they could never give a befitting reply which would satisfy Baba. And therefore Baba would go to another guru. Because he wanted to know the truth. The truth about God and His creation. And no one could give him any satisfactory answer. And in today's murli, Baba said that he would ask those gurus that why did you renounce? Why did you renounce? What made you renounce? Did you experience any sorrow that you renounced? He would ask them. But they never would say about their previous life. They would say, no, we are all dead from that previous life. This is a new life for us. And therefore we don't talk about our past life. But Baba would tell them, well, if you tell me how you renounced, why you renounced, and what situation came which made you renounce the world and become a sannyasi, it will inspire me so that even I want to renounce. Don't want to live in this world. But no one would tell him about their previous life before they became sannyasis. So Baba used to search, look for truth, look for how he can also renounce and the world. So that feeling was in Baba before. And then Baba said in one murli that one day he watched a film. There was a film which had come, and the name of that film was Saubhagya Sundari. Saubhagya Sundari. Saubhagya means the one whose husband is alive, and a beautiful woman with her husband. So beautiful woman, Saubhagya Sundari. And in that film, they showed a very beautiful lady, and Brahma Baba then had a thought that, see, this beautiful lady, she's married and she's so happy in her life, I also will get married. And then that made Baba to decide that he should marry. Otherwise, Baba was thinking of becoming a sannyasi. So much before Baba's gyan, he had many, many, feelings of renunciation. He used to speak to his mind, "Oh mind, why are you so naughty? Why are you wandering here and there? Why can't you be under my control?" So, and this he used to ask his gurus also, how to control the mind. Many, many questions. But they could not give him that satisfactory answer as much as he wanted. And gradually how Shiv Baba adopted him and started giving Baba's gyan. But the first word uttered When God comes and the first word He utters is Om. So Om to Om Mandali, Om to Om Shanti, and now what people call us, you know, they always, when they see our badge, it sits on top, Om Shanti, Om Shanti. And what they say, these are Om Shanti people. Om Shanti people, you go anywhere, sitting, you sit in the, at the airport, in the train, railway station, anywhere we go, Om Shanti people. Or they say Brahma Kumaris, but then they come closer and they read from a badge, Om Shanti. So from Om to Om Shanti, from Om to Om Mandali to Om Shanti, and when we say Om Shanti, we become peaceful souls. And even this word Om has many other meanings too. It has three alphabets, as I mentioned, A, U and Ma. So A, U, Ma has more meanings. A means acharan, means our behavior. A stands for behavior. Acharan is a Hindi word. U means ucharan. Ucharan means words. So behavior means actions. U is words. And Ma is manan, our churning. So thoughts, words and deeds. Thoughts, words, deeds. Mind, words, you know, words and actions, speech and actions. So all the three should be peaceful. Our thoughts should be based on peace. Our words should be based on peace. Our actions should be based on peace. So when everything is Om Shanti, thoughts, words and actions, then we are really Om Shanti. So we start from Om, we reached Om Mandali, and from Om Mandali to Om Shanti. And what will be at the end? Again, back to the origin. Back to the original self. Back to the soul. Back to where we came from. We came down as souls, we go back as souls. We came down in that soul conscious state, and then we go back in that soul conscious state. And this is a beautiful cycle we go through. And every time we go through this cycle, how Baba says, your sins are absolved. You turn the disgust, the Swadarshan chakra, and your sins are absolved. We think of the five forms of the soul and we become purified. So yesterday we could not do much of that, the five forms, but I heard that today also in this evening or any time, these five forms will be uttered. Satish Bhai was saying yesterday, the soul, point of light, coming down, becoming a deity, then becoming a worship-worthy soul, then becoming a Brahmin, and then becoming an angel, and then again going back to the soul world. So the five forms of the soul. And when we churn this, how we get purified. So this is what Baba expects from us, because the time has come for us to go back. It's a return journey from where we came. We came in a soul conscious state, we go back in a soul conscious state. And therefore Baba says, be soul conscious, remember me. And this practice is very, very essential, because at the end only this practice will come of use when the soul will be leaving the body. How will the soul be leaving the body? In that soul conscious state and leaving the body, Baba gives two examples how to leave the body. Just like hair from butter. How, if there's some hair in the butter, how you remove the hair? It's so easily removable from butter. But if that hair is in a chapati, in bread roll or whatever, it's so difficult for the hair to come out. It will break in between and then come out gradually. But from butter it will come out so easily. So how should you leave your body? so easily, like hair from butter. In a second, I should be able to detach myself. And for that, Baba gives two examples. One example is of going inwards, like a tortoise. How does a tortoise go inwards? It takes its limbs inwards, and that hard shell becomes a protective layer for the tortoise. So we have to go within and then be in that soul conscious state. Then this is like a shell for us, or like when the soldiers used to go to war, they used to take the sword and they had an a shield in their hand and an armor, no? Or do you call it armor? Armor they would wear. So the sword was for attack and the shield and the armor was for defense. So Baba says the sword is for knowledge, the points of knowledge which we have to use for defeating Maya. And the shield and the armor is defense. That's your meditation and your virtues, your powers with which you can defend yourself from Maya. And that's what we have to do. Just go within and be in this little shield of soul consciousness. This body is an external covering, but I am protected inside this shield. So be like a tortoise to go inwards, and then be like a bird to fly upwards. So inward journey and upward journey, instantly it should be. A bird is never afraid of sitting on a weak branch. Even if the branch is weak, still it's swinging. Why it swings? It may be very weak, but it's not afraid of swinging on a weak branch because it has faith on its wings. Because if that twig or that branch falls, the stem falls, that bird doesn't care because it will fly away. So Baba says you can fly like a bird in an instant, just be detached from the body and return home. It should take you only a second. Before I finish, I would just like to share an experience of mine. It was a very, very big accident I went through. Big detail, I won't go into all the details. But then, we were six of us, three in the back seat and three in the front. At that time, the front seat was not separate, but all together, so driver and two more. So we were six, and how there was a very big accident, so somebody came in the way. And the driver, he applied the brake, but the brake couldn't be applied. You know, something went wrong, and it hit that person, and that person fell down. The one who was in front, the car hit, the front wheel hit his foot, and he fell down. And he was like, you know, a tribal person. He had a logs of wood on his head. He must have gone to the forest, cut wood, and he was bringing that on his head. And he was crossing the road. He didn't see the car. And the car hit him. The driver also did not see the car. Maybe he just came all of a sudden. And so what happened, those logs of wood, they flew from his head and they hit the screen, the windows, the shield of the car. And the whole window, it broke into little pieces, and the little pieces fell on the three people sitting in front. But then what happened? He tried to use his steering wheel and move the car, and there was a big pit, and also a very big pillar. The car could have hit the pillar, or it could have gone into a very big deep pit. But at that time, I was sitting behind. I was on the side. And there was a thin sister sitting next to me and a fat sister sitting next to her. So we were three sisters sitting at the back and one sister on the side and two brothers, one was driving. Well, of course, those small pieces of glass, they don't hurt. They just fall like as if it's raining. But then we were affected, and so I just caught hold of the seat in front and I said, "Baba, I'm coming to you. Baba, I'm coming to you." I became totally soul conscious. I could feel as if this body was not there. I could see the soul, that light, you know, in front, as if I'd become so light. Now what happened was that car, it touched the pillar nor it went down, but there were bushes. And the car slowly, slowly went and just turned over and slept on the bushes. And that fat lady, she fell on me. And the middle sister who was sitting in the middle, she fell down, you know, between the seats. And she was thin, small girl. And she fell down and that fat sister on me. But then nobody was injured. Not a single one was injured. It was as if like Baba took us in his arms. The whole car was smashed. The wheel came out, the front bonnet, it was, the windows was affected. Everything was, something had gone wrong. But then how Baba protected us. But that experience of being totally soul conscious and going, thinking of just Baba and none other, that was a beautiful experience, which even now if I think of, it becomes so easy for me to become soul conscious. This is what I experience. So we have to experience this now. Only then at the end, it will be easy for us.